A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 140. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons was a 1967 and 1968 ITV series from Gerry Anderson. This was another one of his Super Marionation shows that were, of course, done with marionette puppets. And they did a total of 32 25-minute episodes of this action-adventure series that ran for one season.
And we have the indestructible Captain Scarlet of the title leading the fight against the alien menace of the Mysterons, who are out to destroy Earth. And leading the fight for Spectrum, as I say, is Captain Scarlet. And portrayed as slightly more realistic Super Marionation puppets than we'd seen previously. We've got the Gerry Anderson production team really working exceptionally well. And in particular, we've got Derek Medin's excellent model work and some fantastic special effects and some great explosions to look at up on screen.
Yes, absolutely. I think Derek Meddings was more in the supervisory role on the effects at this point because he was also working on the Thunderbirds films at the same time.
All right.
So we talked about a lot of the basics last time. So let's talk about a sort of typical episode because there was sort of a pattern there. It always started with this introduction by Ed Bishop, the voice of Captain Blue, and sort of setting up the idea, this is who Captain Scarlet is, and so on. And it would then go to this voice of the Mysterons announcing and sort of threatening what their next target would be. And you'd get this sort of speech broadcast over radio frequencies and so on from the Mysterons. And it would go from this to Colonel White and Captain Scarlet and Captain Blue and Lieutenant Green planning out what Spectrum are going to do about this new threat from the Mysterons.
That's right. And often Spectrum's response will involve Captain Scarlet either going undercover in some fashion or acting as a bodyguard to an important figure or going to protect a particular base that the Mysterons have targeted. And of course, the story will probably require Captain Scarlet to put himself in considerable harm's way and to face one of his many apparent deaths at the end of an episode. This idea that Gerry Anderson had of the hero who dies in each episode and returns to fight again. And so, as you've said, we've got a slightly repetitive structure to the episodes, Brian, something which I didn't obviously notice as a child, but was much more obvious watching it again now. But along the way, there are a few evolving sort of storylines and themes, and in particular, this idea that Spectrum are learning more and more about the Mysterons and the threat they pose, and they're developing various techniques and weapons to fight the Mysterons. So there are one or two sort of plot themes that evolve with time.
Yes, they move from being very much defensive to being a more of an offensive defense and go on the offensive to attack the Mysterons preemptively on occasion.
That's right. They take the fight to the Mysterons at times. And as we've said, they do develop some special weapons to use in actually detecting when people have become, have been taken over by the Mysterons.
Yes, they have sort of things that are ideas that are introduced in one episode and then developed more fully in later episodes. We should talk about some of the notable episodes. The first episode was called The Mysterons, and it sort of very clearly sets up the threat from the Mysterons and gives us this original sort of misunderstanding and attack that sets up that the Mysterons are going to avenge themselves on Earth and, you know, carry out this vendetta. And will do things like announce that they are going to assassinate the world president and give us these things that are sort of that what they call their war of nerves, that they announce what they are going to threaten and attack each time, because the threat and the stress it causes and the necessary things that are done to prevent it are as much part of what the Mysterons are trying to do as the actual attacks themselves. So that first episode really sets things up with the Mysterons, and to a certain extent with Captain Scarlet himself, and certainly with the Spectrum organization.
That's right, because in the first episode, Captain Scarlet has been taken over by the Mysterons and is actually acting against Spectrum. But as events unfold, he will be returned or sort of released from Mysteron control and become Spectrum's main agent. And as you say, Brian, it is sort of slightly convenient that they always announce what they're going to do before they do it. But it is part of this sort of greater threat and menace of the Mysterons.
Yes, absolutely. And with Captain Scarlet himself, you get in that first episode a regular, fully human and sort of normally vulnerable Captain Scarlet at the beginning. And then the main character is very early killed off. And we have this duplicate Mysteron Captain Scarlet working for the Mysterons. And it's only at the end of that first episode that we get into this situation where the Mysteron duplicate Captain Scarlet has this invulnerability and these sort of Mysteron abilities, but is fully controlling himself and fully working for Spectrum and no longer a Mysteron agent.
Okay, so that's the first episode, which, as you say, does set it all up and is certainly good fun. A couple of episodes from later on in the season, Lunaville 7 and Crater 101, which I found interesting. They're about the identification of a Mysteron threat on the moon. And then in the second episode, Spectrum have to return to the moon to sort of deal with that menace. But it was interesting because they also show a moon base, and in particular a moon hopper vehicle, which I think they must have used something very similar again when they made the live-action UFO, which of course had much of the same sort of detailed model work that the Anderson team had developed in their puppet shows. So I was interested by the similarities between the moon base we saw and the moon base we would see later in UFO.
That moon hopper was certainly an unusual vehicle.
Yes. Yes, the thing that bounces across the surface of the moon in low gravity.
Those episodes were interesting ones, taking us into that lunar environment and having the one episode where we discover what's happening and discover this Mysteron infiltration on the moon. And then a later episode, it wasn't the very next one, it was several episodes later, we have our main characters going back and saying, okay, we need to deal with this threat that's there. So we had some little ongoing threads. It wasn't really heavy story arcs like we see in a lot of more recent shows, but we had some ongoing threads in there that were really quite good.
Okay, interesting stuff.
And another episode, getting more into one of the, I would say, one of the sillier episodes, they had something called Model Spy, where not only do the angels, these female fighter pilots, seem rather like fashion models, in this case, they actually go undercover as fashion models. And this was definitely a Sylvia Anderson showpiece where they had like a futuristic fashion show and fashion sort of a gathering there. It was quite unusual and a little silly, but rather amusing, I think.
Yes, we've seen the angels in their sort of ordinary day clothes, although they're very high fashion, ordinary clothes and hairstyles when we see them. And then, as you say, Brian, in this one episode where they all go undercover in a famous house of fashion to try and block or to prevent a Mysteron plot, it's a real, as you say, it's a fashions and hairstyles and Sylvia Anderson clearly having a lot of fun with her own particular interests at the time. It is a fun episode, and it, you know, it's very typical of the time, I think, for the 60s and for Sylvia Anderson.
Yes, it also included a big fashion designer who was also an undercover agent.
That's right, yes. Yeah, there's a lot of undercover work going on. And I think we've seen the angels also go undercover from time to time with Captain Scarlet on various missions that he has. But this is the real episode where they certainly, they all look like catwalk models all the time.
Yes, this was the big episode for the angels. And I think the undercover agent who was a fashion designer sort of foreshadowed what they did later in UFO with the head of a film studio being an undercover leader of the force fighting against the UFOs.
That's right, of course, yes, the film company in UFO, which is the cover for the Shadow Organization.
Exactly.
Okay. Another episode we'll mention was called Dangerous Rendezvous, and this was interesting because as we've said in the first episode, Captain Black and Spectrum inadvertently start the war with the Mysterons with a sort of unprovoked act of aggression by Spectrum. And in Dangerous Rendezvous, Spectrum tried to sort of correct that fault, and they tried to arrange a peace with the Mysterons, and they actually tried to negotiate with the Mysterons, and it looks like we're being set up for some sort of negotiated settlement. Of course, things don't go according to plan, and Captain Scarlet is inevitably put in harm's way yet again. But I thought it was interesting of the producers to actually show some of the consequences from the first episode. Again, probably stuff that completely passed me by when I was a child, but much more interesting to watch now.
Yes, it was an interesting thing to throw in there. I'm glad they had that. And it linked up to those Lunarville 7 and Crater 101 episodes as well in the plot of what they're discovering there. They discover some information that allows them to proceed and do this. So that was a nice little link up there.
Okay, so some of the episodes that stood out to us as we were working our way through the 32. And of course, you may have your own favorites, and as ever, do please let us know which they are.
Lieutenant Green, arrange a demonstration launch.
SIG, Colonel.
SIG?
Spectrum is green. It means everything is fine.
SIR, spectrum is red, means the opposite. This way, Doctor.
Angels 1, 2, and 3, prepare for launch.
Here we are, Doctor. The Angel aircraft are below. We have five pilots, codenamed the Angels. One is always stationed in the leading Angel aircraft, ready for immediate launch.
Angel 1, immediate launch.
When we talk about these British Invader shows, we do like to discuss spin-offs where there have been. And with any Gerry Anderson show, there's usually quite a few spin-offs, Brian. And this is no exception. We have, of course, got numerous toys. We have action figures of the Spectrum agents and the Angels and Captain Black. But we also have the SPV cars, the Angel Interceptors. And as ever, if you search eBay, you will find plenty of examples of these toys still available, many of them in collector's hands and in collector condition. So there was quite a wide range of stuff there.
There were always lots of toys for the Gerry Anderson shows. It was sort of like the earlier version of the toy phenomenon for Star Wars, almost, especially in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose helping with the production costs, because they were quite costly shows to make, I think, with all the extensive model work and special effects.
That's right.
lots of people involved. There were also comics, quite a number of comics, particularly in Gerry Anderson's very own TV Century 21 comic. So we had stories that were continued in the comic books, and many of them illustrated by Ron Embleton, the artist we mentioned last time, who did the fantastic paintings for the end credits of the television show. So you can see some of his comic book work on Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons, and some of that has been collected and is available now.
And in fact, the original paintings for that closing title sequence were kept by the producer, Reg Hill, and in 2003 they were actually auctioned off by Christie's and went for £2,000 to £3,000 each. So those actually went out and were worth a little bit, which was interesting.
I think they're in a private collector's hands now. I'd love to see them on display. It would be fantastic if they could be exhibited somewhere.
That would be a sort of a good classic TV museum kind of thing to have, wouldn't it be?
Absolutely. And if you know any more about the original paintings and whether they have been exhibited, please let us know.
In addition to the TV Century 21 comics, there were also some Japanese manga comics in print as well, which were based on Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons. So you had different kinds of things being done in comic work. And at the time when the TV version was being done, they also did an audio version. They did 5 audio adventures that were released on vinyl EPs. Those are actually available on that DVD box set now. And they were little 21-minute or so audio adventures done by the original cast when they were doing the original on-screen versions. And I think one of those, I think the first one, actually deals with some of the situation where Captain Scarlet is changing from this Mistron agent into someone who was working fully for Spectrum. So there's some neat little stuff in there, too.
Okay, very interesting. Again, there were several novelizations of stories from the television series which were available at the time. More recently, there have been several video games based on Captain Scarlet and the Mistrons. Not our particular area of expertise here, Brian, but as ever, if you know more about the video games, do jump in and join us on the Facebook page or the forum and let us know more about them.
Oh, absolutely.
And as was quite common with Gerry Anderson Productions, they did package several episodes together to make 2 compilation films, which were broadcast on television networks in various places around the world during the 1980s. This has happened before, I think, with UFO and Space 1999. And here it is again with Gerry Anderson, where they sort of make a sort of mini film, I suppose, out of 2 or 3 episodes.
Interesting. They also, in 1993, the BBC bought the series and started rebroadcasting it, which gave a bit of a surge of new interest in the show, which is kind of interesting that you had at that point the BBC broadcasting shows, which were originally ITV shows. At one point, this was something that really did not happen. But by 93, I guess, there was starting to be that acceptance that you could broadcast shows on different networks in the UK, and it wasn't a completely separate thing as it used to be.
Interesting. I think they'd had success with a rebroadcast of Thunderbirds as well. So, yes, probably that would prompt it.
And then in 1999, Gerry Anderson produced a test CGI film with Francis Matthews and Ed Bishop reprising their roles of Captain Scarlet and Captain Blue as this little short computer animated piece for a new Captain Scarlet. And this was actually shown at a Fanderson, big Gerry Anderson fan convention in 2000, and that led to something else.
Yes, it led to, in 2005, the Gerry Anderson's New Captain Scarlet, to give it its full title, which was a completely CGI version, although there was some motion capture of actors. It's got a completely new cast of voice actors. They did make some slight changes. Lieutenant Green becomes a female in this version, and there is more romance between some of the characters and between Captain Scarlet and one of the angels and so on. An expensive series. Apparently it cost £23 million to make it. 26 episodes of 22 minutes, so slightly snappier, shown in two series on ITV, so it went back to ITV, keeps the basic plot, keeps updates some of the technology, so you know the designs of the vehicles, new vehicles updated for the 21st century. And I have seen a few of these episodes. I did expect to dislike them because of CGI, but actually they're quite good, and I quite enjoyed the ones I've watched so far. As ever, it is available in a box set, which over here in Amazon is £22 for the two series, and it's also available to rent on Love Film. Over in Region 1, Brian, that series?
In Region 1, it's not available on DVD, but you can, of course, find the Region 2 set as an import. It's available for about $47 on Amazon.com. And I think there's some episodes on YouTube as well.
Again, yes. So if you've had a chance to compare and contrast, you know, let us know.
So interesting. I take it the characters in the CGI version are better at walking.
Yes, much better at walking. They're much better at running and throwing themselves around. They're much better at fist fights and so on. So yes, there is a more sort of dynamic feel to it. But, you know, it's better than I expected it to be, and very expensive show. I guess that's what television shows cost these days.
That break in at Spectrum Security Vault, it's still puzzling me. I can't get it out of my mind.
I know what you mean.
Why would a group of apparently professional criminals go to such trouble to break open a strong room full of what to them must be useless documentation?
So, we've talked about some of the good and the bad points of Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons as we've gone along, which brings us into our section on the various bits that we liked and disliked about this series. So, Brian, where would you like to start us?
Well, this was a fun show. I guess the obvious thing, this was sort of moving on from Thunderbirds, which had been done not that much earlier. And I think this was, in many ways, a big improvement on Thunderbirds. The shorter episodes gave you a much snappier pace, which I think worked better for this type of show. I did like the look of the puppets with their better proportions. And even more than that, what I really enjoyed was the voice cast. I think the voice work on here and the characters and what they put into it was really much better than what we had heard on some of the earlier shows. And it was quite enjoyable.
Yes, they're terrific. Francis Matthews, Ed Bishop, Donald Gray and Cy Grant. And of course, Shane Rimmer, when he crops up, lovely to hear him. And like yourself, Tony on Facebook reminds us that Francis Matthews' Cary Grant impression was pretty good for his Captain Scarlet voice.
Those voice actors brought a nice sense of character to these characters. And they brought some emotion to them, which is nice because in the Super Marionation medium, you don't get a lot of emotion showing through visually. So it's really nice if you can bring it in there in the voice work, which I think they did more successfully on this show.
Yes, that's right. It was a big deal to change the puppet's head to show emotion. So most of it relies on the voice actors, and they do very well. We, of course, have mentioned the great model work and the great special effects. And as you've said, Brian, I think they were really very, very good at this by this stage in the late 60s, the Anderson team, so much so that they were getting interest from other film companies to come and do work for them.
Yeah, there are few things in this sort of model work and sort of space imagery and these vehicles and things. There are few things that are before, you know, that came out before Star Wars that are done at this kind of level that Gerry Anderson and Derek Meddings and the team were doing.
Yeah, and as you say, few things that were as good as this. So fantastic model work. All those explosions were lovely. As you know, I'm a big fan of the music by Barry Gray and the fantastic end credit sequence with those lovely Ron Embleton paintings. So that's very good. Any other good points that you'd want to mention as we go along, Brian?
Well, all in all, this was a fun show. It had a really good sense of fun to it. The ideas and the writing were pretty good. You know, they were not always spectacular, but there was some pretty good stuff in here and how it was written and some of the ideas they were popping in from show to show. Certainly at its best, it had some pretty good stuff in it.
Okay. What about the features that perhaps weren't quite so good? Was there anything else that stood out for you?
Well, certainly these episodes do tend to be a little bit repetitive at times. And you're sometimes watching an episode and thinking, wait, did I see this one before? And while the Super Marionation, I think, looks much better than it had in some of the earlier things, it still is sort of a limitation compared to some other kinds of animation and certainly compared to live action. So you certainly have to see this show as, you know, for what it is. It's not the same as like a bigger live action or more, you know, or a different type of animated series could be.
Okay, interesting. As you say, the puppets were more static than they perhaps had been in Thunderbirds even. And that was because of some of the technical aspects of the newer puppets with the realistic proportions. And as you've said, the repetitive episodes does become more obvious watching it as an adult that in each episode the Mistrons would say what they were going to do. Colonel White would send Captain Scarlet and Captain Blue to stop them. Captain Scarlet would get killed and then reappear alive again in a hospital bed at the end of the episode. And that would go on and rinse and repeat, really. But obviously that was less of a factor when I was a child.
Yes, that is a limitation with this. But I think the biggest limitation and the biggest drawback on this series is that it is a Super Marionation puppet show.
Yes, it's not a show for people who don't like puppet shows. And it was also, interestingly, at the time, thought to be perhaps too dark and violent by some parents. So, interestingly, at the time, it perhaps didn't quite get the same reputation as Thunderbirds, which was a very safe show that you could plonk your children down in front of for 50 minutes at a time. Here we've got the shorter format and not quite so popular with some parents because it was dark and gritty in places. But interesting stuff.
Yes, you do see blood in Captain Scarlet. You do see death and, you know, Captain Scarlet being killed and coming back, and sometimes other characters dying as well. So, yeah, it is sort of a little dark for a late 60s children's show.
Okay. I always like to pick up some of the comments from the Facebook group here. And again, Tony mentions that he enjoyed this show, but not as good as Stingray or Thunderbirds for him, which he felt had better characters. And Cora, who points out on Facebook that Captain Scarlet reminds her a bit of Captain Jack from Torchwood, or perhaps I should put that this the other way around. It's Captain Jack who reminds her of Captain Scarlet.
Yes, that's certainly something that's been mentioned. They even incorporated that briefly into an episode of Torchwood in Children of Earth. They mentioned Captain Scarlet in reference to Captain Jack. There was also even Doctor Who in episodes that had Captain Jack had this flying aircraft carrier, which did seem rather like Cloud Base. So nice little similarity, little connection there.
Yes, I well remember watching that episode of the new Doctor Who, and I yelled at the screen, that's Cloud Base. So that brings us neatly to our recommendations for our listeners and whether or not they should buy one of these box sets or purchase it on iTunes. What are you going to say, Brian? What's your suggestion?
Well, this one is a little bit of a tricky one. It is a fun show. It has some neat little ideas in it, but it really does have some limitations as being a puppet show. So if you enjoy puppet shows and animations, you might want to check this out as a fun thing. It certainly is not going to go at the top of my list for anyone, but it really is kind of a fun show. And if you want something fun and, you know, something that is sort of a light show, but with some dark ideas that does some things that are a little different, it might be worth checking out. So I'll make that sort of a guarded recommendation.
Okay. I was a little bit unsure about Thunderbirds, although I loved the show, as to whether I could recommend it to somebody who'd never watched it. But as you've probably gathered as we've gone along with Captain Scarlet, it's going to be an unequivocal recommendation from me. I love this show. I think it's fantastic. I think it's nice to have those short, snappy episodes. And I would really suggest that you check out one or two episodes on YouTube or iTunes, or buy the delightful box set, which is just fantastic. So from me, it's a big thumbs up.
Okay, very good.
But as ever, if you have seen it and think that either Brian or myself have got it wrong, or you agree with our takes, please let us know and jump in on the email, website, forum, or Facebook and let us know.
Absolutely. So, in summary, Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons was a puppet marionette-based show that featured an organization called Spectrum, that, of course, being called Spectrum, had members who were codenamed after different colors, and they were fighting against the Mysterons, who, after a mistaken attack by Spectrum, the Mysterons set out on this ongoing vendetta against Earth, the Mysterons being from Mars. So we have, from week to week, episode to episode, adventures where the Mysterons are setting up to attack and threaten something on Earth, and Spectrum is forced to come to the defense of Earth against the Mysterons.
There we go. An interesting show from the 60s, and one we'd like to hear your views on.
Definitely a classic little bit of the 60s there.
So, do join us next time when we're jumping right the way to 2008, switching to BBC, for a political thriller set in a futuristic London that's not too far from our own. A show called The Last Enemy, which has got a very interesting cast, Brian.
Yes, if you watch current British TV shows or even current American TV shows, there's a good chance you might recognize someone in there. Very interesting show, so it'll be a good one to talk about next time. So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. We are also part of the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you will find us there, along with some other podcasts.
And we're very glad to be part of the Voice of Geeks streaming radio network on the internet at vognetwork.com. And as ever, we say hello to Vogue Network listeners and hope you can join us in our forum there.
Yes, absolutely. Hello, Vogons.
All Vogons everywhere.
So, thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada saying SIG.
That's right. Until next time, this is Captain Indigo saying Spectrum is green.